This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
So this is the, what do we call this thing? Oh, the Ultimate Marvel Podcast. And that kind of sounds like a big deal, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To be ultimate. Anyways, my name is Jack Sutherland. This is the Baron, Ronnie.
Yeah.
How are you, man?
Pretty good.
But Ultimate sounds like a big deal. I feel like it's we set the bar kind of high with this name. And like it's not just a week in Marvel or a Marvel movie podcast. This is the ultimate one, the paterfamilias of podcasts, if you will.
Well, I would like to think that we're a good Marvel podcast, but Ultimate pretty sums up like what we're going to talk about, like everything Marvel, not just comic books or TV shows or movies or Netflix stuff. So, I mean, Ultimate's like the nice, neatly wrapped package.
Right. Who knows where we might wind up.
Yeah.
We might find ourselves in the depths of the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Yeah. You never know.
I'm personally kind of pumped about this podcast. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
But, so I was thinking about this and like the Nerdy Legion crowd, it seems like it's a lot of Valiant fans.
Mm-hmm.
And lately seems like a lot of DC fans, especially since Rebirth started, but you guys got the Rebirthically podcast and now Martin's doing a Batman podcast. And those that listening don't, or those that don't know us, you and I also do an Aftershock Comics podcast, which is sort of the new up and coming independent publisher.
Right.
But up until now, from what I can tell, there's like been very little Marvel talk. And Marvel's like the one with the most going on, it seems like.
Yeah.
But not with, just with comics. Like Netflix is, the shows are killing it. They've kind of, I guess they've sort of cornered the market on superhero movies, at least for the moment, although DC's kind of ramping it up also. But there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there's tons to talk about.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to getting into it.
How did you start in Marvel?
How did I start? So my first comic that I ever bought and the first run that I guess I ever followed was Warlock and the Infinity Watch.
Oh, wow.
Did you read that?
Yeah. I mean, haven't read it for a while, but yeah, I read it back then.
Yeah. I'm surprised because like everybody, that came out right after the fallout of Infinity Gauntlet, which everybody read.
Right.
But not as many people read the Infinity Watch. But but the Infinity Gauntlet was kind of a big deal back then. And this was like early 90s, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Starlin was writing that stuff. And he was, I mean, I think he's kind of like one of the biggest names in comics at that time. At least it seems so to me.
Yeah, I would agree.
And the Infinity Watch kind of spun out of that. And that was my first comic. But oh man, I guess those who aren't familiar with it, like what it was all about was Thanos had used the Infinity Gems to destroy the universe. But there was a lesser known cosmic character named Adam Warlock, which nobody knows. The diehard fans know, but most people don't know who that is. But he had stopped Thanos. And in the aftermath of that, he was kind of charged with protecting the Infinity Gems so nobody could accumulate them again and just, you know, cause all that mayhem. Mm-hmm. And he picked a team to help him do that, which, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, but that team was sort of the infancy stage of the kind of modern Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, I didn't.
Because it was... Warlock was the guy who oversaw it all, but Gamora was in it. Drax was in it. You remember Moondragon?
Yeah, yeah.
she's not in the movie, but she was in some of the runs a few years ago with Guardians of the Galaxy. And then there were some other characters that aren't with Guardians, but like Pip the Troll was part of that. I mean, he sometimes makes weird appearances with Rocket the Raccoon, though. Anyway, so there's some talk. But I guess in a nutshell, like, Warlock doesn't make too many appearances anymore. So for me, it's like, it's not like if you're a Spider-Man fan and there's always Spider-Man stuff bombarding you and right. like, keep your nostalgia up. Like, Warlock's, you know, seldomly making an appearance. So when he does, it's kind of special to me.
Like a little special treat here and there.
And yeah, and I don't like, I don't care how bad it is. If it could be the worst comic on the shelf, if he's in it, I'm going to buy it. So, but how about you, man? What's your Marvel origin story?
The first Marvel comic I ever bought, ironically, was Web of Spider-Man 6 and 7. And I think I just loved the two covers of it. which I just recently completed the whole run of Web of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
All the way from 1 to... I don't even know what it is off the top of my head.
Is that like that's the from the 80s?
Yeah.
Mid-80s?
Yeah. And it wasn't like I eBayed or went to Amazon or Midtown or Mile High or anything like that. It was like me actually going through back issue stuff like at cons or comic shops in different towns when we would go or whatever. So,
well, you had to be like what, 10 years old?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Who were you going to these? Who was taking you?
My uncle.
Okay.
So that's actually the first Marvel one. The first comic ever was a DC one, but this being the Marvel podcast, that's a different story for a different time. But my town didn't have any, and my uncle, or a local comic shop, and then my uncle's town, which is like 45 minutes to an hour away, I'd go there and spend summers with him and my cousins for a couple of weeks out of the summer.
Okay.
And then we do little chores, you know, like mow or you know, dust or vacuum or, you know, whatever it was, just, and we got we'd get $5 at the end of the week.
Yeah.
And the covers, like Web of
and
Spider-Man,
that was good for like two or three comics back then, whereas yeah. now it won't even buy you an event book.
Yeah, well, sometimes it got me a stack if I went to the quarter bin.
Yeah.
You know, right. So. But Web of Spider-Man number 7 has the Incredible Hulk on the cover. And that was about the time when the black suited Spider-Man came out.
Okay. Which one?
That was,
not Miles.
No, not Miles.
Okay.
When he got the symbiote suit.
Okay, gotcha. Right, right.
And so it was actually pretty cool because I got 6 and 7. Well, in 6, it's like him swinging through this skyscraper type stuff of New York. And it's like you would see a speedster running, you know, where it's different incarnations of him.
Yeah.
And he's in his traditional costume that on that cover. And then on 7, it's Incredible Hulk. And it's preludes to the black costume.
Yeah.
And so me being 10 or 11 or however old I was then, it was just like the covers is what got me into that. And then, like I said, over several years now, I've actually went back and completed that whole run.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't... Go ahead.
Which, how many hundreds of issues? Well,
I don't think it... I was trying to look, because I haven't looked at it for a while, but it's not as big as like normal, as you would think. I think it's 100 and some odd. But
okay.
But it wasn't like trying to go back and get Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, just because it's Web of Spider-Man, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So is Spider-Man like your guy?
Spider-Man, I would say, Spider-Man, I would say, would be my go-to guy, yeah, in Marvel.
Okay.
Because, I mean, just like you said with Warlock, if it's a crappy storyline or, you know, whatever, I'm in for it. Now,
yeah,
I love comics in general, so, you know, I'm sure I've read worse things than some of the bad storyline stuff, so.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about Spider-Man is it's a big enough name that they usually put somebody decent on him.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, my kid's dressing up as Spider-Man for Halloween. All the kids love Spider-Man.
That's cool, yeah.
And I told you, we got a Spider-Man. Did I show you the picture?
Of your Halloween decoration?
Yeah, we took a full-life dummy, like a life-size dummy, mm-hmm. and bought like a full Spider-Man costume and put him in that upside-down Spider-Man position with his legs bent, like holding onto the web in the center, and he's just kind of dangling from our porch roof.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it turned out pretty cool.
Which you can put up Halloween decorations because you live in town, correct?
Yeah, why? Are you out in the country?
Yeah,
Nobody would see it?
I'm out in the country, so when we lived in town, I'd go like all out on Halloween decorations and on Christmas stuff, you know, like the Griswold style, but...
Yeah. Well, no, we're like, you know, the houses are like 10 feet apart and there's like a million houses on each street, so...
Yeah.
A lot of kids.
Yeah.
So did you read much in the 90s?
Yeah, I read pretty much everything in the 90s. I mean, you know, because that was like the McFarlane run of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And the X-Men, like Executioner's Song with X-Men.
Right.
Which, where we first get Bishop and Cable. That's a... You know, that's an iconic run, I think. That's probably one mm-hmm. of my favorite crossover events, I think.
Yeah. I read some X-Men in the 90s, and I was also collecting that the Wolverine run from then. But for some reason, I don't have the same connection to them like I do with Warlock, for some reason.
Right.
Like now with this this whole sort of Inhuman X-Men feud.
Right.
Like, well, I'll just go into it. It seems like there's a feud going on with X-Men and Inhumans, and I don't mean just like Death of X thing.
Right.
Like, even as far as market share goes and movie rights, a lot of older fans, though, seem to be kind of upset about the state of X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it seems like they're sort of being de-emphasized in favor of Inhumans. I don't know if you'd agree with that or not, but Inhumans are kind of seem like now they're central to a lot of the stuff. Like they're central to Civil War, they're in S.H.I.E.L.D. And even now with like this whole Terrigenesis thing, that Cloud's going around and it's empowering and creating Inhumans, but it's like killing off the X-Men. So I've noticed a lot of people, a lot of older fans, which, by the way, maybe I shouldn't say older because I'm kind of like an older fan now. But I need to be looser with that word. But I don't know. They seem kind of upset with the state of the X-Men because they're being de-emphasized. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I do think it's because of the public movies rights type thing, kind of like with the whole Fantastic Four type thing.
Right.
Because right now there's no Fantastic Four book at all.
Right. Well, yeah, there's not even a Reed Richards in the universe. Every time they mention him, he's like, where the heck is he at?
Right. Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Right. And everybody else is splintered off into different stuff, like the things, and he's the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. now, and Beast is within Inhumans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, I know Beast isn't a Fantastic Four member, but you know,
right?
So yeah, I think there's a lot of politicking going on.
To me,
I wasn't ever a huge Fantastic Four comic fan. I mean, I like the Hickman run and stuff like that, which is the newer stuff, you know. But
right,
and some of the 80s and 90s stuff I liked, but to me, it just seems like there's a hole missing, you know,
right,
without them.
Yeah, because they're like, well, that the Fantastic Four is a bigger deal to me than X-Men, because the Fantastic Four seems sort of like the grandfathers of Marvel in a way.
Right.
Whereas, I don't know, for me, the X-Men, I guess I never had a huge connection to them, so I don't mind personally just kind of rolling with Inhumans instead. I mean, they're sort of, somebody would argue with me that they're, but to me, they're kind of redundant anyways. Like, they have their different mythos and whatnot, but I don't know. They're more or less the same concept, right?
Yeah, they're more or less the same concept. The only difference that I think is, like, and you can look at sales charts and all that for the books, but I think Inhumans were better as, like, guest spots in books than to, like, actually have their own books, as to where X-Men has those longer followers,
right.
I guess. And the X-Books sell better.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
because
they have that, well, yeah, that's the pushback from all the fans I'm talking about.
Right, right.
But, I don't know. But, see, Marvel has this whole movie thing kind of steering the ship. So it almost seems like they're sort of like, we can force our will on this and do what we want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, I don't know. That whole thing is like, well, we're talking about the movies stuff, but even like the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show can't be with the Netflix TV show, can't be with the MCU, you know what I mean? Besides without like referencing it and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because now they're creatively owned by two different branches of Marvel, you know?
Right.
So.
Now, is that a more of a legal thing, or is that just as far as planning, they're not, it's more complicated now?
Yeah, it's more complicated now. There's more layers to it, but
yeah.
I mean, what the bottom line is basically, what's his name, Kevin Feige, right? Or Feige?
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy that did the Marvel TV stuff, I can't ever remember his name, but like, they didn't agree on the creative way that they were going, so then they don't like each other or don't want to work with each other, so then they just basically split off.
Yeah.
So like in a Netflix series like Luke Cage, for example, that we'll talk about here in a little bit, but like they don't ever mention Captain America or Iron Man or Hulk by name. They just reference the event or the incident
right.
that happened, you know.
They've all sort of played off of the Sokovia Accords, though.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of sucks, too, because to me that's one of the things Marvel's doing really well right now is creating that shared universe, but within the sort of cinematic framework, which, as far as I can remember, has never happened before, at
right,
least not
yeah.
to this extent.
Yeah, it's... I mean, there's some things that you like better than others, obviously, you know? I mean, for me... You know, one of the movies might be just okay, and then another movie's awesome. But, I mean, if you look at the whole grand scheme of things, you know, I didn't have this stuff when I was a kid. You know,
yeah.
I had...
Oh, no. Not at all.
I had Spider-Man and Friends, you know?
Right.
I had the cartoon, and... You know,
yeah.
So it's all cool. It's just...
Yeah, and then even when the movies did start coming out, it took them a while to really... get it right.
Right.
Like, I think Marvel sort of found a formula.
Yeah, right.
I mean, even if you don't love the stuff or maybe you lean towards DC, I mean, you should be able to at least tell that, okay, they've figured out a formula for creating movies that people like and enjoy and want to go see.
Right.
Whereas that wasn't always the case. It was sort of like you'd have a great superhero movie and then like two or three crappy ones.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, I don't know how you are per se, but like for me, it's like there's so much comic goodness coming out for all different things and not just the DC versus Marvel or, you know, Valiant versus Aftershock or Image versus whoever, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah.
It's all there and I don't like getting into conversations where it's like DC fanboys versus Marvel fanboys because,
right.
I mean, it's pointless. You know what I'm saying? Because
yeah.
You're not going to change their mind. They're not going to change the other person's mind. So
right.
What's the point?
And it's seldomly talked about from a like unbiased perspective anyway. It's just somebody who reads all of one and not the other,
right,
or very
right.
little of the other, and
right.
just happens to like those characters because they grew up with them or whatever.
Right. Which, I mean, there might be more of us than we know, but like for you and me, I mean, we read everything pretty much, or from everybody. So it's not just strictly hardcore Marvel, hardcore DC, hardcore whatever. And so, you know, we can appreciate the things that Marvel's doing right. We can appreciate the things that DC's doing right and the whole nine yards, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of where we're just tunnel visioned looking and I'm like, well, that's stupid because that's stupid, you know?
Right. Now, but since you did bring up the Marvel DC thing, I wanted to ask you what your current favorite titles are.
Okay.
But you mentioned that, and I do think that I have noticed that, like, first of all, as far as current Marvel titles, Civil War's out, right, which everybody knows about if you're following Marvel.
Right.
And it's been, in my opinion, a solid event. I mean, I think the story's well-written and the art's great. But it's been, like, overshadowed by Rebirth, in my opinion, because it started right about the same time. And you know, Rebirth has been great for comics. They've sort of reinvented themselves and got – you know, built up their interest, but it happened right at the same time as Civil War, and I feel like it's just kind of completely been overshadowed.
Yeah, I agree on all accounts, really. Like, you take I'm sure back in the day, maybe not like in the 80s and 90s, but maybe in the later 90s, early 2000s, like, it was always Marvel winning the punches, you know? And now it's kind of flipped the script a little bit. And you know just as well as I do, like, competition brings out the best of everything.
Yeah, for sure.
And so it's kind of good to see that again, to where that,
right.
And that's why we're getting so many good books across the board. Now, does DC have more better books than Marvel does at this point? It just depends on, I mean, that's a personal opinion, really.
Right.
Well, they're
doing, so it's hard for me to even compare the two, because, and I've talked about this, like, on the Slack channel, we've gone into this a lot, but DC's still kind of doing the thing that's always worked, which is you got your main, at least this is my perspective, they have their main characters. You got Superman and Wonder Woman and Batman, and those were the first Rebirth books that came out, and they're sort of, that's sort of like their heavy hitters, right? That's what's driving everything, and the diehard fans buy other stuff, but everybody on the fence will get those big name characters. Whereas Marvel, like we just mentioned, like the Fantastic Four isn't even a thing.
Right.
Like, the X-Men are dying off. There's no, like, mainstream Avengers book. There's a Captain America book, but it's kind of okay. And it seems like the best Marvel stuff is like these outlier, or these sort of characters that nobody knows of. These fringe characters, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
B-list characters, say.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
like,
it's like that whole, you know, all new Marvel thing where they're trying to, and they're creating characters too, like Iron Man all of a sudden, what's her name? Riri,
yeah,
so it's like a 16-year-old girl's taking over the mantle of Iron Man, which is sounds unusual, but
on one aspect, and then Doom's taking over on a different one,
right,
you know,
right.
So which is continuity and which isn't,
yeah,
which, and I mean, if you think about it, like we talked about there, like, if Marvel wanted to print like 100 different books, and of course, you know, you got your slapstick that came out with Fred Van Lente, and then, you know, you have your Squirrel Girl, and, you know, you have Deadpool and all that, and I understand, like, trying to expand to the new readers, or to just the moviegoer readers, or whatever, you know, Marvel's got that money to where they can do like 40 books for the little kids, or, you know, the
right.
You know what I'm saying, like Champions, for example, you know, that to me, it seems like it's more for the teenagers. I liked it, but it's just not one of those sink your teeth books, you know.
Sure.
Now, as to where, like with the other 20 books or whatever can be like your hardcore books, like not hardcore as in like adult and dark and gritty, but like, you know, Tony Stark as Iron Man, Rogers as Captain America, like we had him in the 80s and 90s, you know, Peter as Spider-Man,
right?
You know, just have some kind of continuity there like it used to be.
Yeah, but I think I guess what I was trying to say was it makes it hard for me to compare when Tom King, for example, he's writing Batman, uh-huh. and everybody loves him writing Batman, and everybody buys Batman and expects a lot from him, but on the Marvel side, he's writing Vision, and everybody's like, oh, who's Vision? And so, it's hard to even make that comparison. It would be different if, like, okay, he was writing, you had him writing, I don't know, Captain America or
right.
a but, more mainstream name.
And the Vision sold good. For Marvel, yeah. So I mean, right. I mean, yeah, I understand what
but
you're
no,
saying.
But nowhere like, near as well as Batman.
Well, right, because Batman's a top tier DC right. character, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, what would have happened if we gave Tom King
Avengers
or whatever? Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, or Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where it's almost like the state of Marvel right now. They don't have their 5-year plan or whatever like they used to, right. You know, like right now they're just skating by with select writers and select artists as to where DC right now has some of the heavy hitter writers, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But if you, if people pick up books, like I wanted to mention Jeff Lemire, because right. we've talked a lot about him. Mm-hmm. If you pick up his titles like Moon Knight and Old Man Logan, they're great stuff. Like I know a lot of people that tune into this are Valiant fans, and he's writing Bloodshot Reborn, which every Valiant fan will tell you if it's not like their favorite Valiant book, it's like up there at least, right? It's awesome. Right.
Yeah.
And he's doing you know great work for Marvel also. But he seems to be kind of like the – would you agree that he kind of seems to be the big up-and-coming writer at Marvel?
I would say so, yeah. I would say that he's probably one of the big up-and-coming writers that they have, yeah.
And I don't know if that's their perspective or that's just because I like the way he writes. But it feels like Bendis is sort of steering the ship.
Yeah.
Or with Civil War.
Yeah.
And then other people are kind of doing side stuff. But now with Charles Soule – and Lemire teaming up on Death of X,
uh-huh.
and that's going to be followed by Inhumans vs. X-Men.
Right.
I'm hoping they're sort of positioning Lemire to be more kind of front and center.
Yeah. Kind of like what they did with Jason Aaron a couple of years ago with, was it Fear Itself? Or was Skeez with... where they gave him kind of like a mini event...
Right.
To do.
Yeah. Right.
It might have been Skeezum, actually, with X-Men.
Yeah.
To where, you know, he gets his legs under him type thing. Because, you know, now he's like one of the top writers for Marvel. Mm-hmm. Which,
right.
There's a lot of stuff that I read that he does. And then there's some stuff that I don't, just because I'm disconnected with the characters, but
right,
like Doctor Strange, for example.
Right.
I don't know if you read it or not, but like mm-hmm. for me, Doctor Strange was like a one-off character when I was growing up. You know, just like oh, well, that's cool that he's in the Defenders book, or you know, he's in a group book. But like, he has reinvented without reinventing Doctor Strange, if that makes sense. You know, it's
well,
just
like, and they also had a sort of prime it for the movie.
Right, right. So it's like, I, you know, that's one of my favorite Marvel books.
Right.
And then, like you said, Old Man Logan and Moon Knight, which, you know, after you get done reading Moon Knight, you're just like, what the hell did I just read type of thing sometimes, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. You know, a lot of this stuff, I wonder if the movies are sort of driving these decisions, because putting Jason Aaron on Doctor Strange has to be influenced by the movie coming up, I would think. And I wonder also if, like, putting Riri as Ironheart to kind of replace Tony Stark could have something to do with Robert Downey Jr., you know, his contract coming up soon, and they got to make some hard decisions. If they want to keep that continuity, they can't just stick somebody there and to replace Tony Stark, right?
Right.
Because Tony Stark, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., he really made that character, and in a lot of ways, he's one of the main things, factors that helped them launch the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think.
Yeah.
So to just stick somebody else in there wouldn't suffice. So I wonder if maybe there's some connection where they're like, hey, now we can, instead of replacing him, we can just introduce this new character and find a young, up and, you know, female actress.
Right.
And go in a different direction.
Yeah, I would say that has a lot to do with it, too. And then, I mean, you hear both sides of the coin, too, like where you hear that they're getting complained a lot about not having this certain ethnic group, whatever it is, you know, Hispanic, yeah, right, African-American, whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Or racially diverse.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So they can try to be doing that. I mean, because even they made Thor a woman, you know, so.
Right.
Which, to me, I don't care. Like, down to my core, I don't care if it's, say, Peter Parker or Miles Morales. As long as I open that book and I read an awesome story, right. I don't care. I mean, yeah. I don't know your opinion about it, but, like...
See, I don't know. I've never really had this tested with a character that I've... Like, if Adam... First of all, I just love it if Adam Warlock was relevant.
Right,
but
right.
If he was and they decided to make him a female... I don't know.
See?
I'd have to experience that.
Yeah. I mean, because I know there's tons of people out there that are so...
But if they changed his race, I don't think I would care.
Yeah. It's just... I mean, it's freaking comic books. We read it to escape from real life anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, if I'm going to get that hellbent out from that perspective, then...
Right.
You know, what are my values looking at the real world? You know what I'm saying? There's more things to get upset about than...
Yeah. What are your priorities, man?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. So have we stalled long enough to, like, talk about Luke Cage?
Yeah, we can talk Luke Cage. That's fine.
That's the big news right now, right?
Yeah.
We stalled long enough. Somebody's probably listening being like, man, I don't want to hear about comics. When are they going to get to Luke Cage?
Yeah.
That's what everybody's talking about.
Or like, okay, we're hearing comics, but please don't spoil Luke Cage because we still haven't watched it yet.
All right. Are we going to?
I don't think we can go into like deep spoiler territory, but I mean.
Yeah. We're not going to bring up that he dies in the last episode, right?
Right. Or that, you know, he actually dons a yellow shirt.
Oh, right. Forgot about that. Where do you think it stacks up with the other Netflix, with Daredevil and Jessica Jones?
See?
Now, have you finished it?
Yeah, I finished it. Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of... To me, that's kind of like asking me, like,
which jelly bean flavor tastes the best?
Yeah, right, yeah. I mean, because, like, I can tell you that I love Daredevil Season 1, but I like Season 2 better.
Yeah.
And I thought Jessica Jones was great because it was creativity different than Daredevil, say.
Yeah.
And then Luke Cage was completely different than what the other two were.
Right.
There is one thing that I'm kind of getting tired of is like the hallway fight scene or some kind of fight scene like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it was awesome in Daredevil and it was, and then the stairwell scene in Daredevil 2 was great.
These close settings.
Yeah. But then like, do we have to have every series have to have one of those.
Yeah.
You know, because we know that Iron Fist is coming out, and it's going to probably have at least one, if not multiple.
The Netflix trademark hallway fight.
But
I'm going to be looking for that now. Not going to be able to.
I loved Luke Cage. I thought it was great, and I saw some feedback on it, whether it's positive or negative, that it was too African American in culture, or you know, whatever.
Right.
And see, and that's just like the stupid ass mind.
That, no, I don't know why anybody would complain about that.
Yeah. And if you're going to go in looking for that or whatever, then of course you're going to complain about it. You know what right. I mean?
Well, but it's like if they did that with Matt Murdock, who is his personality is typically like a very white character, right?
Right, yeah.
But this is Luke Cage. I mean, it's the comic historically has been way more diverse than even the show.
Right, yeah.
I mean, they made it more modern.
Yeah, I agree. And I loved it. I loved being enriched into that culture.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought it brought out a lot of good stuff that, you know, if you made it too quote unquote white or whatever, then then it would lose some of its effects.
Yeah, and it would be more like, you know, Daredevil.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, these Netflix shows already sort of have a little bit of a similar feel to them, even though they're different concepts and different cultures and whatnot. There is sort of a similar sort of dark undertone to all the Netflix stuff compared to Marvel's other stuff.
Right. And you're not talking about how Daredevil has red tint to the filming, and Jessica Jones has purple tint, and Luke Cage has yellow tint.
Right. Now I want to call out our other Aftershock co-host Martin Ferretti, because I don't know if you heard the podcast with him, and I don't remember who it was, but they were talking about how they didn't feel like these shows were comic booky enough.
Okay. Him and Daryl. Was that the one?
Maybe it was Daryl. And maybe Daryl like defended it. I can't remember. But you know, you watch The Flash, right?
Yeah.
It's a great show. But they're like jumping through portals and going to other Earths and fighting all these like monster metahuman, you know, crazy people every other episode. And it feels a lot like a superhero comic book to me. Whereas these Marvel Netflix shows seem to be taking a more realistic approach. Almost like they've dug out this segment of the, I guess I just said realistic, talking about like Bulletproof Man and stuff, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Like you can sort of conceptually understand the idea of a guy who's blind, but his other senses are, you know, like
are heightened.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like Marvel sort of dug out this segment of the MCU and said, we're going to go in a different direction. And this is going to be like maybe for adults who maybe are or aren't necessarily comic book fans, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then there's like the Punisher, he's just like a dude with guns for the most part. Mm-hmm. And Jessica Jones, it sort of felt like it showcased very little of her abilities, I thought.
Right. Yeah.
And then in addition to that, like, you know, she was dressed in street clothes as was Luke Cage. And Purple Man and all the villains, they're kind of like just normal looking folks in suits, right? Like I don't think Marvel wanted this to be superhero-y like their other stuff.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah, I agree. This is like the more the street level down to earth type stuff, really.
Yeah. And I like that.
Yeah.
And I like that because I can get like my dad's watching the Netflix stuff and he loves it.
Right.
But, you know, if it was Spider-Man or something, he couldn't care less about it.
Right. Feels more tongue-in-cheek type stuff.
Yeah.
What was your favorite part of Luke Cage?
Oh, man. My favorite part of Luke Cage, without a spoiler, I think my favorite part was the soundtrack, to be honest.
Really? Yeah.
Martin, again, they like made fun of me in one of the podcasts, saying I'm like the like the whitest guy you know. However, right. They acknowledged that I was like into 90s hip hop.
Right.
And so the whole soundtrack was like 90s hip hop. So when like Gangsta or something comes on, it just elevates the whole viewing experience for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like when we first got the teaser trailer for it.
Oh, yeah.
And we had ODB, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, that was like the perfect song, and then for what was going on, right?
Yeah.
Now with like Iron Fist, if we get some zenned out music or whatever, then I would understand that too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But so what was your favorite part? I kind of cheated. I didn't really.
Yeah. You kind of did the old Martin and avoided the question with an answer.
Yep. I learned from the best.
Actually, I liked it when there's a couple things, like the small little nods to everything, like with Pops calling him Power Man, you know, just like the right. small little nod type stuff to comic book stuff.
Yeah, you're good at picking out those things too. They go by me sometimes.
But, like, I think scene-wise, I think it was, like, when, I can't remember, the Asian couple's diner.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, he comes in and...
That was, like, the first major scene with him.
Yeah, and then, like, the bigger guy was like, man, I don't even like these dudes, I'm out, you yeah. know? So, yeah, I mean, awesome. It was, like, it was, like, an intense scene, and then you had that little... humor part in it, you know what I'm saying, to like break it up, and then it went right. back to being real, you know?
yeah that was great,
and that's what I thought it did a lot, was like the realism, maybe not like real, like, because I've never been to Harlem, I've never been to New York, you know what I'm saying,
so you've like, never been to New York?
No.
Wow.
But like, you know, it's like one of those things where even though I'm not there, and like Martin and Daryl pointed out, you know, that Harlem isn't that big or isn't that far away from Hell's Kitchen, and Hell's Kitchen isn't that big of what is portrayed, yeah. you know, I can kind of get by that disbelief just for this part, you know what I'm saying? As to where...
Right.
Because that sets the tone for the show, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, if you would have told me that like Harlem was like a big city or whatever, you know, a big part of the city, then
did they think there should be more crossover because of the proximity or something? What was their issue with it?
No, that like I think that like Harlem's only like one or two blocks or whatever, along with like Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And then like okay. they mentioned gotcha. like Spanish Harlem was actually like 20-30 minutes away from actual Harlem, but they made it seem like it was like two blocks away type thing,
right?
which I think so. It's been a while since I listened to that episode yeah. of theirs, but no, there's a lot of, like you said, like I almost think that I like the Netflix shows better than the movies sometimes,
yeah,
just because of the realism.
Right. Yeah. Definitely.
And then maybe we're going to get beyond belief here with Iron Fist, because, you know, he's right. like a mystic kung fu guy.
Yeah. Now, Doctor Strange seems like it's kind of might try to tap into some of that, at least that little bit of that sort of darker aspect of the Marvel Universe.
The more mystic part of it.
Yeah. It looks like it's going to be a little bit more, it's not going to be that light action comedy approach that they've taken to other stuff.
Right.
It doesn't seem like it.
It's not going to be Guardians of the Galaxy style.
No. But I will say, like, both trailers are out, and as crazy and, like, trippy as Doctor Strange looks, the trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy 2 has me more interested.
Really?
I think so. Like, so... I don't know. We haven't had anything like Doctor Strange, so it might just blow my mind. But Marvel does that like action comedy thing so well, and Guardians of the Galaxy is like the epitome of that.
Right. Which was their first attempt at it, though.
Yeah, true.
You know, so like where we had Winter Soldier was like the deep spy espionage type thing.
True.
And then what about Ant-Man? Did you like Ant-Man?
Oh man, I liked Ant-Man, but it felt like I could kind of take it or leave it. Now, one thing I loved about it though is it was very appropriate, age appropriate for my son,
uh-huh.
who's 9 years old.
Right.
And he loved it. I think that was his favorite movie, he said, or something. And I enjoyed it also. So from that aspect, it was great. And right. And when the next one comes out, he'll be pumped about it.
Right. Well,
I also took him to Batman vs. Superman, and that was, like, I think a little bit too dark for him.
Okay. I could see that, kind of, like the different tones. But I was just trying to think, like, Ant-Man was more like the heist-type movie, you know?
Oh, right.
As to where it feels like each Marvel movie is, like, different from each other, even though it's all under the same umbrella, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess that's their pitch for it, right? Is that, like, with Doctor Strange, it's going to be into the mystic part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes it works, you know, and sometimes it doesn't.
Right. They don't have that right now, so it should add a nice dimension to this cinematic universe.
Right. It'll be a dimension to that, but, like, general public wise, though, how will it be perceived?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Ant-Man was different, right? But it might be one of the lowest ones at the box office, even though it might have been a hit, you know?
Yeah.
Just because it was different than Avengers, say, or Guardians, or yeah. whatever.
Well, I think they need to mix it up, because here's something I noticed. Like, so Doctor Strange comes out November 4th,
right.
Which maybe the next one we'll be talking about that right. next podcast. But then after that, so Guardians of the Galaxy 2 comes out May 5th, 2017, and at that point, it seems like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like, kicks into hyperspeed, and there's, like, a movie about every 3 months if you average it out, because there's Guardians of the Galaxy in May 5th, then 2 months later, Spider-Man comes out in July, and then in November, Thor, 2 months later in February, it's Black Panther, and then shortly after that, Avengers, then Ant-Man. Like, if they don't diversify it, I'm thinking people could possibly start getting burnt out on these Marvel movies.
Well, yeah.
Because it's going to be back to back to back. They're going to start coming fast.
Right. And see, and they can even do that with, like, on the Netflix side. Like, right yeah. now, we're just getting
right
two shows a year. Right.
Yeah.
At the spring and then in the fall. When we could get four, potentially.
Yeah.
You know? Because there's tons of stuff that they can explore on that side of it.
Oh, sure.
Without
well, they haven't even gotten to the... gotten to Defenders yet. Nobody's really teamed up. Well, I guess Jessica Jones and Luke Cage teamed up.
Right.
But not officially.
Right, right.
Yeah. And Claire's sort of tying everything together.
Yeah, she's the Nick Fury. Right?
Yeah.
A better looking Nick Fury, but...
yeah, for sure.
But, like, even, like, some things that are mentioned and other things is, like, where we can have Moon Knight in there. Or, you know, Punisher deserves his own type series.
Right.
So then we can even spin off to Marvel Knights, where we can introduce Blade again.
Sure.
Or, you know.
You think they'll ever tie any of this into the movies?
I doubt it.
It doesn't seem like they will, does it?
No. I mean, referencing it and stuff right now is okay. But, I mean, I don't have to have my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on Netflix, or my Netflix people on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or in the movies, really.
But here's the thing, like, and this isn't a good reason to do it. Well, I don't think they're thinking this, but the Infinity Gauntlet, which the upcoming Infinity Wars is pretty much going to be based off of Infinity Gauntlet, which we talked about earlier.
Uh-huh.
And that was like a everybody event. Like, everybody had to get involved in order to stop Thanos, because when he collected those Infinity Gems, he had deity-like power.
Right.
So when they get to Infinity War, some people I know have thought, well, maybe they'll make a Daredevil appearance or something.
Like, it's all hands on deck type stuff?
Yeah, because it had to be. I mean, if they follow the comic script, it sort of had to be.
Right. Well, and then, you know, that's where we get into the crazy stuff. Like, with Civil War, it was kind of adjusted because they didn't.
Yeah.
Not all players were on the table.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Adam Warlock was the main character, and this is the thing that bugs me. He was the main character in Infinity Watch, and he's like MIA. So I think they're going to write him out of it.
Well, we might get him in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah, well, that's been a theory also. We'll see. One of the upcoming podcasts may have me really happy or really like pissed off. We'll see. One way or the other.
Yeah, and then, like we were talking before, like Deadpool, the director just split on that. So,
yeah, you know. That's crazy.
Yeah. So we'll see. I think Deadpool is fun. You know.
Oh yeah.
I don't read Deadpool comics.
I don't either. I've never liked Deadpool, but I love the movie.
Yeah, exactly. It's like one of those things where, you know, I don't get it, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's a bad comic. It's just not a me comic.
Right.
But, like, yeah. I've seen that movie, like, countless times now just because it's hilarious, you know.
It's really well done.
Yeah.
A comedy, I mean, for me in general, comedy is hard to do in comics. I'm pretty critical of comics that go that route.
Right. And honestly, that's like the most comic accurate comic movie.
Yeah.
Almost, you know?
Oh, for sure.
But. Yeah. Anything else you want to touch on, sir?
Know. I think that's a lot, man. We went over a lot of stuff.
All right.
But that's what you have to do on an ultimate podcast, right?
That's right.
Got to load it up.
You got to load it up.
So, how do they contact us?
How do they contact us? We will be... You can send comments or whatever to hello@nerdylegion with Ultimate Marvel Podcast as the subject.
There you go.
You can reach Jack on the Twitter machine, right?
Yep.
Which is at Jack Sutherland.
Yep.
And I am on there with at Rombar316.
Mm-hmm.
And are we doing this like every 2 weeks? Are we doing it every month? What are we going to do?
We said every month, but I guess we can kind of see how it goes.
Just play it by ear, like
yeah,
have a bi-weekly.
See what we're excited about.
Okay. Because like you said, with Marvel stuff, there's like tons of stuff coming out down the pipe all the time. So.
Yeah, and I think when Doctor Strange comes out, we'll probably be itching to do something before it's actually a month out.
Yeah, right.
And hey, they can also catch us on the Aftershock Central podcast.
That's right, yep.
If somebody wants to learn more about Aftershock.
Yeah.
And you can catch Ronnie on like half of the other Nerdy podcasts.
Yeah, I'm on the Aftershock one, like you said. I'm also on Rebirthically. And I'm also on Off the Ropes, which is a wrestling podcast. So it's not even like nerdy. But thanks for listening. Hope you guys liked the first episode.
Yep. We need a slick closing line.
Yeah, we do.
You got one off the top of your head?
Not right now. Not since you put me on the spot.
Stay marvelous.
Stay marvelous. Okay. Hey, that works.
No, that was lame. Gotta work on that.